I've always enjoyed the story of the husband that was preparing his wife and young son for supper with his boss. And he was explaining that his boss is a very difficult and hard man. He started the company and he worked and he built it into a rather large organization. And now he's a man of great wealth. And it was important for this husband to do well and impress his boss if he wanted to have a good career. And so he's giving instructions to his wife and his son to ask questions and just listen very attentively as he explains his success. And so they sat around the table for some time, and the boss is talking all about himself and speaking all about his successes and all the things that he had accomplished. But he couldn't help but notice that the young son, the little boy, is staring at him the entire time that he's talking. And finally, he called it to his attention and he said, "Young man, I notice you keep staring at me. Is there a reason?" The little boy said, "Well, yes, sir, because my daddy said that you are a self-made man." Well, the guest beamed and he said, "Well, yes, sir, I am." The boy said, "Well, I'm just kind of wondering, why would you make yourself like that?" There are few texts in the Bible that we could look at that are going to be more condemning, more disturbing, more shocking than James 5, verses 1 through 6. And I got to confess to you, I have never heard a sermon on these verses in my life. James pulls no punches as he rails against the lifestyles of the rich and the famous in his own community. And he almost seems to be asking them this question: why have you made yourselves like that? Don't you know what God has in store for you? See, some people that are living very well in the present are in for a future shock. So if you want to follow along in your own Bible, James chapter 5, beginning in the first verse, the brother of Jesus writes these words. "Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you." Now, most commentators would tell you that James is not talking about Christian businessmen, but he is talking about the ruthless, wealthy upper class of his day that were oppressing the poor. And that might be true. But we have to pause and ask ourselves the question: is it not possible that many believers are not guilty of the same very sins that James is describing in this text? Is the problem of living a self-indulgent lifestyle only something that non-Christians struggle with? What James is amazed at is that people could live selfish, affluent, indulgent lifestyles when it should be so clear to everybody that these are the last days. He'll say in a few verses, we're going to look at this next week, the judge is at the door. If you live a self-indulgent life in the present, well, you are going to be in for a future shock. Why? Because wealth lies. Every time that it promises to be a worthy object of your trust. We talked last week about how some people, because they experience financial prosperity, they become susceptible to the illusion that they can actually control the future. And related to this reality is the observation that wealth tempts believers to think that they can maybe somehow put off the future. It might be the last days for you, but I've got way too much money for it to be the last days for me. Money promises security, but what it demands is the allegiance that should only go to God. Money is not neutral. Behind money is a very powerful dark force. Jesus says, don't get caught up in the thinking that you can serve both God and money. You cannot do it. Both of them are wanting the same thing from you. Money and God both want your allegiance, and you cannot give both allegiance. Materialism is not just a person that is, you know, a person that has affluence. Materialism is an attitude that a rich person or a poor person can have. It is an attitude that is expecting gold to do what only God can do. And James isn't condemning people for being rich, because if he had done that, he would be rejecting biblical evidence that piety and prosperity are not mutually exclusive. There are examples of very godly men, very godly women in the Bible who experience prosperity. What he is condemning is the arrogant, self-indulgent lifestyle that results when you put your trust in wealth instead of God for your sense of security about the future. Let me put it this way. Some who trust in God may well become rich. All who trust in riches will become ungodly. The Bible is full of examples of this. You go all the way back to Achan in the book of Judges. You've got Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, Ananias and Sapphira, even Judas. You cannot find a simple example of one individual that decides to trust in money for their security that ends up making godly choices with their life. So James has a bunch to say, and he unloads on the fat cats of his day, and he exhorts them to shed tears. He's not talking about tears of repentance. He's talking about tears of anguish because of the misery that's coming upon them. He's addressing people who live like they don't really believe in the sure return of Christ and the certain judgment of God, but they are just about to be overwhelmed by the evidence of their own misplaced trust. Wealth lies. Every single time wealth tells you that it can be a worthy object of your trust, it's lying. There's a short proverb that you should commit to memory. Proverbs 11 verse 4 says, "Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death." The ungodly rich are in store for some future shocks. And I want to share three of them with you this morning. And I got to confess before we advance, this was a sermon that I wasn't really excited about preaching. But this is part of God's word. Here it is. Hoarded wealth will testify against you. It's inevitable. If you trust riches for your security, then you will inevitably try to amass more wealth. If you think that wealth is what makes you secure, then more wealth is going to make you even more secure. So you will try to accumulate and amass wealth. And in James' day, you did not do that by buying and trading stocks. You did that in three different ways. You did that with clothes, with food, and with precious metals. So James says, your food is going to rot. Your clothes will be food for the moths, and your metals are going to corrode. There are some serious problems with the strategy of hoarding from a biblical point of view. If you ever watch the show Hoarders, Buried Alive on TLC, I'm just, you know, kind of enthralled by that show, and my wife and my son always hate it when I turn it on, but it makes me want to clean up my house. Let me show you what some of the problems are with hoarding. From a biblical point of view, what you accumulate is only going to deteriorate. Jesus talked about this. The moths are going to get it. The rust is going to get it. The thieves are going to break in and steal it. That Greek word for thieves, I think, is translated government. Just kidding. Kind of. So James says that you have trusted your future to what can only rot, corrode, or become moth food. The second problem, stockpiling evidences extreme selfishness. Now think about this. What clothes get eaten by moths? The stuff that is in the back of your closet that you never ever wear. What food rots? The stuff that's in the back of the pantry that you haven't touched in weeks. Why would a person rather his goods deteriorate than belong to somebody else? Remember, we talked about this last week, the parable in Luke chapter 12. This guy, he's already rich. He's already got a farm. He's already got barns. That puts him way ahead of everybody in Jesus' day. And when he gets this big harvest, does he think, you know what? It's about time for me to go downtown and feed some needy people. No. He thinks, I need to build bigger barns. He already has more food than he could possibly eat in his life. But he's just going to stockpile more. But what he could not put off was God's future for him. Let me say something to you. This is for me as well. We have too much. We have so much stuff in our homes that sit on shelves because we think I'm gonna use that someday, or we might wear that someday, or we just want it because we like it, but we never use it. That's a problem. There is a clear biblical command that if we are in plenty and we know of people that are in need, and you do, then it's your responsibility to do something about it. Clean out your closets. Empty the shelves in your garage. Sell some of that junk on eBay, Craigslist. Have a garage sale. And then don't take that money and go and buy more stuff for yourself. Take that money and use it for the glory of God and help someone in need. Here's why I say that. The Bible warns against hoarding because money talks. James says their corrosion will testify against you. What does he mean? Well, I think it comes clear in this verse. Look at it from the New Living Translation. This treasure you have accumulated will stand as evidence against you on the day of judgment. Same verse from the Message. Look at how he renders it. You thought you were piling up wealth. What you've piled up is judgment. Now imagine the future shock when the clothes of the rich take the witness stand to testify against their owners in the court of God. And just, by the way, if he can make a donkey talk, he can make a closet talk. Jesus clearly taught that we can use our wealth to commend us in the next life. But James is saying, you know, it works both ways. That wealth that will commend some of you, it will condemn some of you as well. Hoarded wealth will testify against you. That's future shock number one. But another future shock is this. Justice cannot be bought. Now, everybody knows that in a fallen world, wealth supplies more than just buying power, as it's quoted on CNBC. With affluence comes influence, usually at the price of justice. Just this weekend, yesterday, the family leader invited Donald Trump to speak to a big group of Christians here in our state. Does Donald Trump exude or live out a biblical worldview? No. But he has influence. And that influence, unfortunately, even Christians can be swayed by simply because he is an affluent man. When NASA was preparing for the Apollo missions, they trained for walking on the moon in the deserts of Arizona. And I have no idea if this is true or not, but it's one of those preacher stories that really sounds good. But one day, these astronauts, they're out there training in their suits, and they're in their moon suits. They're walking across the desert, and there's this old Navajo elder walking with his son along with him. And they see these men, and the old Indian gets very excited, and he wants to know, what are these men doing in these funny suits? So as they come up to him, they explain to him that they are going to be going to the moon. And the Indian gets very excited, and he asks, well, can I give you a message? He's being translated through his son. Can I give you a message to give to the people of the moon? Well, there's a guy that's kind of watching all of this out there with the astronauts training. He's thinking, this is perfect marketing for NASA. And so he decides to get a tape recorder and have the old Indian elder speak right into the recorder. And he does. And when he gets through speaking, the young son, you know, he speaks in the Navajo tongue. And the young son kind of starts to giggle. And he says, well, what did he say? And he says, I can't tell you. So they take the tape recorder into the Indian village, and they have a bunch of Indians gather around, and they play it, and they say, well, what did the old man say? And they all giggled, and they said, we can't tell you. Well, they finally get a government translator to come and listen to the recording, and he listens to it in the Navajo tongue, and he kind of starts to laugh. And they said, what did the old man say? He said, well, he said, watch out for these guys. They've come to steal your land. In James' day, the rich were able to legally steal and cheat the poor, particularly out of their wages, because they had a tremendous influence in the court system. Because justice in that day, just like almost in every day since, the rich seem to get a little bit more justice than the rest. And remember, James dealt with this back in chapter 2 when he talked about how rich people get treated when they come into church as opposed to a poor person. And he says, you know, isn't it the rich, they're the ones that are actually exploiting you? They're the ones that are dragging you into court? That's what he means in verse 6 when he says, you have condemned and murdered innocent men. He's not talking about rich people walking around with knives, killing people that are poor. What they were doing was they were so manipulating the system of justice that people were starving. They weren't even getting paid for the work that they did. They were being oppressed in this system that was being controlled by rich people, because the rich people controlled the judges and the poor people couldn't do anything about it. That is a very old problem. The prophets used to rail against that. Just read the book of Amos. The golden rule in our country, in America, is the person with the gold makes the rules. And anybody who thinks that everybody out there is actually on a level playing field hasn't been out there with their eyes open. Don't worry, I'm not going to be joining the Occupy Wall Street movement or something, but I'm just very convicted by the truths that I read in Scripture. The cries of the poor go largely unheard by you and me, but God hears them. Their cries will reach the ears of the Lord of hosts. You see, justice, true justice, cannot be bought. The oppressed have registered an appeal in the highest court of all, and their complaints will be given a fair hearing on the last day. And on the last day, God will have the last word, and his justice cannot be bought. And when God renders a verdict, there will never be an appeal. Some people are in for a shock because all of their life, their wealth has helped them to make things go their way. But there is coming a day where you cannot buy the answer that you want. Justice cannot be bought on the day of the Lord. One more future shock. Rich fools face God's wrath. Wealth can foster the illusion that the future can be controlled by me somehow, Or I can even delay it. I can put it off for a while. So consequently, rich fools live like this is not the last days. These aren't the end times, but they are. No amount of wealth can excuse a person from the day of the Lord. When the day of the Lord comes, a person's wealth will not stand when he stands before God. The rich man, in the story in Luke 16 with the rich man Lazarus, he found out that all of his wealth had no bearing on his standing before God after he had lived such an indulgent, selfish, affluent lifestyle. Look at the metaphor that James uses in verse 5. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. Do you know what he's talking about? I wasn't raised on a farm. I was raised in Cocoa, Florida. But some of you were raised on a farm, and you know that you take a hog or you take a cow and you fatten it up. You put it out in the field, you make sure it has the best grain, it has the best pasture, and that dumb animal has no clue why you are letting it get so fat. It is being fattened for slaughter. It's absolutely ignorant to the fact that it is about to face its judgment. And James says that's exactly how these rich people are living. In fact, let me give you a little history lesson. It was probably less than 10 years after James writes these words that Jerusalem fell. Remember, he lived right in Jerusalem. His ministry, his community, was the Jewish community in and around Jerusalem. And Jerusalem fell after the Romans come and encircle the city and starve the people for a very long time. They invaded, and the people were literally starving to death. And there are some awful things recorded historically that happened in Jerusalem while the Romans encircled that city and did not let anything in or anything out. So when they went into the city, they knew there was a lot of wealth in that city. But you see, the rich people had hoarded all this food. And they were intending on finding the wealth in that city. And so they would just go to the wealthy people. Well, how did they know who was wealthy? They were the fat people. They were the people that weren't skinny like everybody else because they were starving. They had hoarded all of this food. So they went to them, and you know what they did to them? They tortured them until they finally let them know where their wealth was, and then they went and they took it and they killed them. And that happened literally 10 years after James writes these words. All who think that God can be mocked are in for a future shock. What do you do with a text like this? I wrestled with this. I mean, this is a very disturbing text. On the one hand, I want to believe that, you know, this isn't us. This doesn't represent our hearts. We're not materialistic, self-indulgent people like he's describing in this text. But that hand would be lying. The fact is, every single one of you in this room are rich. And I think that one of the reasons that God puts disturbing texts like this in the Bible is because sometimes he wants to show you what the end of the road looks like. So that if you're on that road, you can get off that road. And if you're not on that road, you'll never even consider getting on that road. So let me give you three pieces of counsel as we close out our morning. First, consummate justice. Do not cheat anybody. And here's something that I need you to hear very clearly, because the legal system of America today allows people to do many things that are legal but are not just. It allows people to do something that is legal and keeps money that you owe from going where it belongs. But I'm telling you, we are all going to stand one day before a higher court. Don't cheat anybody. Regardless of whether someone tells you, yes, that's legal, man. You could do that. That's legal. We should, as Christians, go overboard to model fairness in all of our dealings, even if that means we risk being taken advantage of by some people. I remember Bob Saylor telling the story of going to a newspaper machine to get a newspaper out, and the door was open. And he just recalled in his mind all of those times that he had put in a coin, a quarter, and it wouldn't open. So he had to put in another one to get it to open. He thought, this is owed to me. I'm not paying. I'm going to get a free newspaper. So he reaches in and he grabs a newspaper. It was a cold winter day, and he's like, you know, score. And he turned around, and the wind blew, and it caught his coat. As the door shut, it's shut in the box. He literally had to put money in to get his coat out, unless he just ripped it out. Fairness and honesty is something that we should never compromise as believers in the Lord Jesus, ever. Not even for something as small as a newspaper. Be fair with all men, but listen to me, be even more than fair with poor. Consummate justice. Secondly, cultivate contentment. I love the story of the Quaker. And you know, Quakers are known for living a very simple lifestyle. And you notice that he had a new neighbor. And this big truck had pulled up. And one exquisite piece of furniture after the other was coming out of that truck and going into this house. And finally, the Quaker called across the fence to his new neighbor. And he said, "Friend, if thee have need of anything, come and see me, and I shall teach thee how to live without it." If we would learn to be more content, we wouldn't have this temptation to hoard stuff. 1 Timothy 6, Paul writes, "There is great gain in godliness with contentment, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can't take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content." And then the writer of Hebrews echoes the same thought. Keep your life free from love of money. Be content with what you have. For he has said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." When we stand before God, the things that really matter will not be things. Finally, contemplate eternity. What happened to those rich people in James' day was that they had let their wealth cloud a biblical view of the future. Rich man, poor man alike, we all have the same destiny. We all have an appointment with God on the day of the Lord. And on the day of the Lord, it will not matter what you have left behind. What will matter is what you have sent ahead. So when I come over to your house, don't show me how much house you have, or what kind of car you drive, or take me out to show me all the land that you have. Let's look up at the sky together and say, how much do we have in that direction? My prayer is that we will all be in for a future shock, because we will be amazed at how God has multiplied the treasure that we have stored up in heaven. I want to close with these words, and I just want you to remember that you are rich. You are wealthy. So James is writing to you. This is for you. This is not for the Donald Trumps. This is for the Mike Damastases. Paul writes to the young preacher, "Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, not to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life." Would you stand with me? Let's close in prayer.